Welcome, everybody. For those of you who are new, for those of you who have stayed, welcome, everybody. My name is Christopher Wallach. I'm a solutions architect, and I work for the Enterprise Communications Global Practice at Microsoft. And as for, forgive me, for those of you who are here the last session, I'm going to say it again. I don't sell anything at Microsoft, and I don't support any operational thing at Microsoft, which is really weird. So you would say, well, what do I do? What I do is focus on you, which are the implementers of technology for service consumers, which are the end users. So I focus on the end user experience. And more specifically, I focus on enabling a good first experience for that end user. And that we talked in the last session about it was about securing the edge or securing Link and the security parameters around Link. And it all goes down to the service consumer, which is the end user, your employees or your users, when they, the very first time they pick up a Link-enabled phone, put on a headset, initiate a call over their Link client, if that experience isn't a good experience, or even a moderate experience, the rest of, or their perception is set, the seed is planted, that product is substandard. And it could be the network, could have something completely nothing to do with Link. It could be what we talked about the last session. It could be the authentication mechanism that so they have to they're constantly being prompted for their password. Whatever the problem is, I mean, I've seen instances where the end user didn't understand that they had to use a headset. So the headset was sitting next to their laptop. It wasn't plugged in, and they were shouting at their laptop. Even after they were told, hey, you got to plug in your headset and put it on, it doesn't matter. The seed is there because we respond to things emotionally, especially when it's change. We respond to change from an emotional level in that I feel pressured that I need to do my job, whatever that job is. It's HR, sales, doesn't matter. And my, not to say my personal worth, but I get angry when I cannot be productive. And if you're preventing me from being productive the way that I used to be, then it's that thing. It's whatever that thing is. And so we understand that at Microsoft. And so that's really the evangelism that I do, the work that I do with implementers such as yourselves, is to what in the Marine Corps used to say, prior preparation prevents poor performance, right? Another fellow Marine in here? Huh? There you go. So the five P's, and really what that is, okay, we're going to build it, we're going to test it, and then once it's tested, then we're going to put it in pilot. Once we're good with it, then we're going to roll it out. Okay, well, how do I, and I always use my mom as an example, how am I going to roll out this product to my mom and get her as quickly as I possibly can into with the ability to actually use the product, right? So With that being said, that's what I do. Link Online and Link Hybrid Overview and Administration is what we're going to talk about over the next hour, hour and a half. And in the last session, I asked the question, why are you here? And I was trying to think of a nicer way to say it, but I think that's kind of an okay way to say it. So I would like to get some feedback. I am not going to bore you by death by PowerPoint, and I never stay on script. So I prefer your input and your feedback. So let me ask, for those of you who are not in the last session, why are you here? What are some things that you want to get out of this session? Can I pick on you?
Sure. We're in the process of rolling out with our region. I work with our region. Mm-hmm.
So you work in a retail vertical, right? And you're rolling out Link and to users, some users who are pretty technologically savvy, some who aren't, and you want to be able to have a good first user experience.
Correct.
Right. And so from Link Online, Link Hybrid Overview, are you looking at going to Link Online?
For the in-store users on shared desktops, yes.
Okay. So you're going to kind of have that hybrid environment where you have some on-prem, some online. Okay. Anyone else want to share?
We have late 2013. We just decommissioned 2010, and we already have Office 365 for some people, and we're looking into having a hybrid link internally.
So we have a hybrid. We have a Link 2013 environment. We have Office 365, and how do they do that, right? Because I mean, one of the things that Microsoft is well known for is talking about product, right? So I'm going to talk to you about Link, 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 Link. If you need something to keep rain off the roof of your garage, Link is your thing. That's what you need, right? The hammer and the nail kind of thing. It's not that I don't speak about product. I've been involved with Link for a long, long time. I don't. My forte, if you will, is to talk about solution. And solution is what she was just saying, right? If you have, to this analogy, if you have need something to keep water off your roof, I'm not going to tell you Link, right? And something else. So that's what we're going to talk about. In this session, what we're going to look at is, one, why you might choose Link Online, and what a hybrid is, and then where you're going. So I'm just going to move along because there's a lot of slides. Holy cow, there's 77 slides. So I'm going to hurry up, and so I never go off script. In any event, the agenda, what we're going to talk about today is the introduction to Link Online, like I was talking about, online topology and requirements. We're talking about Link Online and Link Hybrid and the differences. And for flavor, because I never stay on script, I'm going to address things like that, right, where things come together, things mesh. Office 365, who can tell me what Office 365 is?
Whatever you want it to be.
See? There you go. Perfect answer. Whatever you want it to be. So, you know, Link Online, what is that? Exchange Online, what is that? Solutions, again, are about providing services to service consumers. In your organization, think about how you do email, how you do telephony. How does my user pick up something, stick it in his face, and he speaks and someone else hears him on the other side of the world? Right? So telephony, how do we use email? How do we share information? Whether that's file sharing or can we both collaborate in documents? How do we not only share that information, but store that information? How do we collaborate? So if you and I are working on something and we have no idea of what we're talking about, how do we get him involved? And then he doesn't know, so how do we get her involved on the other side of the world? How do we do that in a seamless manner that's easy, quick, and has a minimal UI, right? So we have to find five different things and look up her number and, oh my gosh, well, where's she at in the world? And I have to look up his number. So this is what a solution is about. Link Online, Office 365, is intentionally focused on service. So the answer is Office 365 is a variety of features and services that enable communications and collaboration for your end users from where they are, or I should say, services and collaboration what they want to use where they are. So if we want to say I am in instant message chat, or if I want to email him, or if I want to email you, or I'm just going to send a link to the whole group. So, and I'm at my home office, or I'm at a business meeting, or I'm at the Starbucks. Once you facilitate that communication between your users, then that's when the magic starts to happen with regard to a business process. That's why we're here. I totally just ate up a bunch of time. So, next, Link Online. So specifically, what is Link Online? It's subscription-based, delivers collaboration capabilities of Link in a cloud-based hosted service, allows organizations to retain control over the service while avoiding operational burden of on-premise servers. What does that mean? So who remembers AOL? Right? Okay. So cloud has been around forever. We just didn't call it cloud back in the day. Hotmail, AOL, all of those things were cloud-based email services that kind of like a telephone, right? You got your telephone at home. There's a reason they call it dial tone. You pick it up because it will always work. Power goes on my house, I pick up my phone, my TDM phone, back in the day, it would work. Now, because I have VoIP at my house, not so much. I use my cell phone. But it's what you're seeing and what Gartner has been seeing and is seeing continually is that the ubiquitization of services as they relate to communications are becoming standardized. So you don't care what service, what the widgets in the back end are as a consumer, service consumer. All you know is that you can put on your headset and you can talk to him. Or you can instant message. Or you can send, you can collaborate on a drawing or design or schematic. As long as you're able to do that, you don't care. And you need to do it right now. It's got to work all the time. That's the dial tone. So Link Online is services for instant messaging and presence, audio, video, P2P calling, and conferencing in the cloud. It's a service that it just, you plug it in and it works. You consume it. That's what Link is. I did not say enterprise voice. We'll get there. So the Office 365 plan and licensing requirements. I'm not a licensing guru. If you have licensing questions, feel free to email me and I will point you in the right direction. So for the Office 365 plan though, there's small business, there's small business premium, there's mid-sized business. There's a licensing requirement for Office 365 and of which Link Online is a component of. I'll say that. These hyperlinks that you see here, for those of you who are not in my previous session, every time that I, as an evangelist, come and talk to a technical body or a community of people that are implementers of technology, and I talk to you about something that is a, needs to be implemented, or I tell you that there's a way of doing something, Microsoft is very intent on providing you a mechanism to access that other than just me. So for TechNet, we will always, what we call IP, intellectual property, anything that I talk about, you'll be able to access on TechNet. If you can access a step-by-step guide on how to do something that I talk about on TechNet, I won't talk about it. So that's why those are there. The reason I say all that is that I remember back in the day when I'd go to TechNet and I'm like, okay, well, how do I implement, you know, a CAS server in Exchange 2007? Okay, do my research, and I'd call my buddies at Microsoft and say, how do I do this? And they're like, oh, it's secret sauce. No, there's no secret sauce. It's out there. It's, and if you don't find it, I'm going to also put myself out there that email me, and I will make sure that you get the IP that you need. So, licensing requirements. Near parity for instant messaging, presence, and meetings. What does that mean? So, we said, what is Office 365? And Link Online specifically. Link Online is a component of Office 365. And what it, so Link Server here represents on-prem. If you hear the word on-prem, that means a link that you built in your own data center and that you're hosting inside your organization. Okay? So when I say Link Server, or if I say Link on-prem, same thing. Okay? So online, or excuse me, on Link Server or on-prem, you have instant messaging presence, Link Meetings, Federation, Media Controls, Enterprise Voice, if you so choose to roll it out. Those are all the things that you that will work. Link Online is a little different. You have IAM in presence, Link Meetings, Federation, all that's fantastic. Media Controls, mm-mm. And then Enterprise Voice, today, mm-mm. So when I say no Enterprise Voice, I'm going to be very specific. If you and I are on Link Online, I can place a link call to you. No problem. What we can't do is if he's on his cell phone in his car, try and drag him into the conversation. Okay? What I can't do, if I'm on Link Online and he's in his car, I have no mechanism to call him. Right? So that's Enterprise Voice. Anytime you externalize the communication, out to the PSTN, that's enterprise voice. Dial-in conferencing is also, throw that in there, right? So conferencing, yes, we can have an AV conference, no problem, as long as we're all using our link client and we're all online. But as soon as we have to dial in, no. Does that make sense to everybody? Okay.
So the mobile app or the mobile link clients don't tie into the online stuff?
So the question is, do the mobile link clients tie into the link online? Yes, but it's not. If it's dial-in, no. So there, and really what it's talking about is SIP. If you can connect via SIP, then you can go link online and talk audio. But as soon as I have to convert that SIP, or excuse me, convert that media to anything that goes out PSTN or egresses out through the telco, no, because there's no mechanism to do it.
Are you using mobile data or technical wireless equipment?
Yes.
I think there's confusion. If you're on the mobile client, the link mobile client, and you're on your cell phone, you can receive a call. But if you're trying to receive the call via your cell number,
right,
you won't be able to receive
it. Does that answer your question? So just for everyone, because I was kind of, I mean, back in the day, I was trying to wrap my mind around that too. Your link client on my mobile device, I actually got a ticket in Washington State because you're not supposed to do this when you drive. And my mobile client speaks SIP, and my mobile client do P2P audio, and my mobile client will also do conferencing. So I had a conference with a couple of service execs and some account executives, and it was you know, a very technical thing, but I had to go get my son for his doctor's appointment. So I just transfer the call, and away I go, right? So I'm on my link. When I say transfer the call, let me be specific. It was a transfer from the state to my other point of presence, which was a client running here. It wasn't my phone number. But as soon as I left my Wi-Fi at my house, my link client says, I don't talk over your 4G, so I'm going to transfer it to your phone. And it just started cutting out, and I went, ah. So I was in a hurry, I did this, and got a ticket. Don't do that. So is that a good illustration?
So we'll work over 4G, though.
So if, to answer, will it work over 4G? Yes. If I told my client to continue the conversation as long as it's SIP and Wi-Fi, yes. I'm sorry, you said 4G, so no. Once it goes 4G, it's the carrier that's carrying that signal in. Does that make sense?
Even over the data?
Well, no, actually I take that back because it does work over data.
Yeah, right.
It does work over data.
It's going to be pretty choppy.
It was, yeah. Yeah, it will work over data.
And you said it's not available today, but
is that on the road now? So that's a great question. So the question is, the Red X is, if it's not on the, I said today, is it on the roadmap? If you hear me say things like not available today, generally they will be available in the near future. So let's say, just, there's certain things I can't just say, by this time or this date or this product or that kind of thing. But I understand that, because I talk to a lot of customers, and there's a lot of customers that say, you know, for years you guys have been saying you're going to do this. You know what? When are you going to do it? If I wasn't being recorded, I'd say, get off the pot, right? Get her done. We're trying to get her done, quite frankly. And I'm being recorded, so I don't care. We're getting her done. It's coming soon to a theater near you. So that you know, the other thing is that Link is now Skype for Business. That's been released. So you'll see, you won't see that in these slides, but anything that you see online that's Skype for Business, that's talking about Link. All right, so requirements for Link Online. So again, remember your user base. When I say your user base, there's clients, or excuse me, your users in your Active Directory have an object, a user object, and they're going to use that as a authentication mechanism, or they're going to use that in the authentication mechanism to consume that service externally. So we're talking about federation, we're talking about directory synchronization, All of these slides are available up online for you to download, along with the notes. So, at a high level topology, you're gonna, from the left, right, we have the external internet, the perimeter network, the on-premise network, and then your internal or external, on the right. So, where are your users at? So your on-prem network, generally, so we're talking about those users that are going to log into your, they go to work every day, they go to their desk, wherever, they log in, they authenticate, right? Those are your on-prem user, or those are your users that are on-site. So how, when they authenticate to your Active Directory, the intent is that link just pops up and everything's fine. They don't have to put in multiple credentials, they don't have to log in 50 bazillion times. It just works. That's the intent for whatever product it is. It doesn't matter if it's Outlook or whatever you're logging into. You know, single sign-on has been and gone, right? So we want, that's the ultimate goal for Link Online or Office 365, is that your users are able to consume that. These are the components at a high level, the topology components that you'll need. So you'll need a federation. You'll need directory synchronization. And the thing to understand about this slide is that the directory synchronization and the federation is all about what's called the single source of truth, right? In the previous class, we talked about the security mechanisms or authentication and how users authenticate for the services that they're going to consume. And the intent, as I just said, was to get to a point where the burden of attestation and the burden of synchronization is not on the user, it's on the system. That's what this represents, is that you'll need Active Directory Federation services, you'll need the directory synchronization server, you'll need your ADFS proxy, and all of that needs to be set up and configured before your users are able to come online and consume that service. So the Link Online network requirements, in the last class we talked about STUN, talked about TURN, talked about ICE. Those are all voice elements on how we communicate through the edge. Again, this is online. This is also available in TechNet. I don't want to bore you with death by PowerPoint and read every single thing to you, and then we'll go through this. Is everybody pretty familiar with this? So again, a more detailed Link Online network requirements. And this is the source IP and the destination IP. Now what we're introducing is the SIP signaling, your PSOM web conferencing, your HTTP downloads, audio, video, all of these mechanisms. So the source IP and the destination IP, the source IP is your client, the destination IP is the Office 365 service. And that has to be, so, and it gets in the source port and destination port. And that become, let's see if this next slide is a little clearer. So these are the network requirements. So unrestricted access to the following domains. So your users to do that will need to have unrestricted access to that. So MicrosoftOnline.com. MicrosoftOnline-P.com, all of those namespaces they'll have to have unrestricted access to. Does that make sense? So essentially these ports and domains are subject to change. The link on the bottom is going to show you what's necessary today. So when you go through the configuration or when you go through the setup process, we'll get into, so what's required to get, you know, is actually set up to get this running. There's actually a deployment guide that you go through step by step that'll show you this is how you enable Link Online. So remote client connectivity considerations. Sorry, it's very loud. When a remote user is connected from a corporate VPN and attempts to launch the Link client, The Link client will always attempt to resolve the external DNS SRV record for Link Online. So that's, you know, underscore SIP, underscore TLS, whatever. Your name is contoso.com. If the VPN does not allow for split tunneling, the sign-on traffic will traverse the VPN tunnel. So what the slide is telling you is that the authentication mechanism for a remote client that is, so here, you know, here we are, we talked about the scenario where your on-prem users, the guy drives to work, the lady drives to work, gets to her desk, signs on to her laptop. That's a specific scenario. This instance, you have that user who's consuming it from home. There should be no difference from that person's perspective. The mechanism by which they authenticate is a bit different, but their user experience is no different. The thing to notice here is that the user sends out the invite. The client includes all the candidate addressing, ICE connectivity, what we talked about in the last session. So then ICE succeeds through the VPN address. And I think there's a gentleman, were you saying that you require VPN?
We're implementing split tunneling right now.
Okay, good.
It's not a trivial process.
No, it is not a trivial process. By any means, those concentrators are difficult. So then the user sends the invite, client includes all the candidate addressing. Candidate has to do with my client wants to instantiate a communication with your client. The candidate is a combination, if you will, of ports and IP addressing that we can facilitate the combination. I don't know if you already know that, I apologize for, but when you hear the word candidate, that's what's happening. And really all we're talking about is setting up or enabling the communication from one link to one link client to another. External DNS requirements. So for Link Online, you're going to have to have a CNAME record for sip.contoso.com or whatever the host name is, and then Link Discover. And then more external DNS requirements, or the SRV records for Federation and SIP port 443.
Get set up in the case of a hybrid where you've got some users inside, outside, and your DNS records.
That's a fantastic question. So the question is, how would you set that up in a hybrid environment where there's a potential for conflict between resolution of that name? We'll get into that. The planning process ahead of time, because it's your name resolution should not change for your on-prem and your online users, but there's a variety of different ways to get around that. Like you could use Brain for one instance, but it's all in the planning. So that way, but we'll talk about that. So client requirements for Link Online, Link 2013. They support Link 2010, but Link 2013. Link for Mac, Link Mobile, Link Web App, the Link Room System. The Link Room System is interesting. By show of hands, who've seen the Link Room Systems? Okay. So it's a great load from a video perspective on the Link Room Systems, and there are things that have been released from a Link Room System that aren't currently supported with Link Online, like the tactile holography component of it, or which is a three-dimensional. I think I talked about that earlier. So if you have Link Room Systems and you're looking at Link Online, you'll have to find out what the requirements are if you deployed that. So Link VDI plugins are not supported with Office 365. Certificate requirements. So the Link Online uses the Baltimore Cyber Trust root certificate. And you'll need that to access or have that in your root CA. So the chain of trust will not be broken. There's the article referencing that. Managing Link Online. So there's an Office 365 portal for Link Online. And again, the intent is that the your IT staff is not building out new infrastructure. They're not managing this new infrastructure. But you are going to need control over, you know, for new users, users who are leaving your organization or coming to your organization. So you're going to need some kind of control on how to provision and then deprovision users for Link Online. There's a portal for the Office 365 portal that you use for user configuration, dial-in conferencing, customizing meeting invitations, and that kind of thing. There's also remote PowerShell. Who here is familiar with PowerShell? Okay, and that's fantastic. The remote PowerShell, you'll have to instantiate the remote session to get to the Office 365. They have to enable that through, when you go to Link Online, there's a whole process to enable that, but I prefer PowerShell, it's just easier.
Is this a separate PowerShell from the Exchange Home PowerShell?
It is, well, so the PowerShell itself is the same version, it's PowerShell 3. The modules and the commandlets that are being used will be...
Yeah, you could enter remotely and you import the commandlets.
Yeah. Now, what, and this is, gets back to the engineering, but they're generally your engineers who are doing this. If you have like Exchange and Link and Active Directory do the same thing, they'll have a profile, PowerShell profile. And so when they initiate PowerShell, it just brings up, it automatically connects remotely to the Exchange and automatically connects to the Link and then imports all the modules they need for Active. So it's just, you can do all that. Office 365 Administration Portal, this is what it looks like. So when you go to the URL, this is what you'll see. And you know, there's the Office 365 Exchange Link and SharePoint. And again, the reason why I want to do away with the confusion, or attempt to do away with the confusion of what is Link Online as opposed to Office 365. It's the same service. It's a subcomponent, if you will. So Link is offered inside of Office 365, just like Exchange or SharePoint. So think of it as an umbrella, if you will. So managing your Link organization, top-level management occurs at the administration center, thing you just saw. The features available to configure are presence privacy modes, mobile push notifications, federation with other Link organizations, dial-in conferencing for users. Dial-in conferencing is not supported with Link Online. Interesting. So I just caught that about 3 seconds ago when it said next slide. I went, hey. That's not. So, coming soon to a theater near you? Can we say that?
Will you be touching on the actual configuration?
Well, we're going to get to the, you know, how to enable. But the administration, yeah, so we'll get there. And if it doesn't by the time we get there, get with me afterwards. So the demo and managing... That's so the demo essentially would be me opening up that web page and showing you that picture. So that's why in the interest of time, given that we're going to move on. So requirements for user enablement, the user must exist in Active Directory on-prem. Directory synchronization must occur from on-prem to Office 365 using dir/sync first. Your directory synchronization must occur from on-prem to Office 365 using dir/sync first. So when I've presented this material at Tech Ready or at the Ignites, where this becomes complex is where you have multiple, either you have a federated forest, you have multiple users in a variety of different locations, you have a hybrid environment that you want to say, you want to have a service, a telco be your service provider, but you also want to do Office 365, what they call three-forest design, which is not supported. coming soon to a theater near you. So this is why we say the directory synchronization must occur on-prem to Office 365 using DirSync first. Here's my advocacy, single source of truth. If you have an issue with authentication, if you have an issue with directory synchronization, understand what is the authoritative source of that truth. And it should always be your directory. And today, it should always be your directory. Okay? So if you have, and I say this because back in the day when Wave 14, or Link 2010 was Wave 14, and then we went to Office 365 beta, we had two different dev environments and multiple user environments, and the directory synchronization between the two was a hot mess. I mean, we would change someone's telephone number and it would change back the next day. And then we would change it again and it would change back the next day. And then we would change it over here and it would change back 2 days later. So that, if I can say, when you're troubleshooting, understand single source of truth resides in a single location. Make that your authoritative single source of truth, and then your director synchronization paths should not conflict. Appropriate valid Office 365 license must be purchased. So how to assign a user to Link Online? This is getting to your question with regard to how do you do the enablement.
The specific question may be, in case somebody else has the same problem or worry, I guess. Our UPN is different than our actual email address. And so when we assign users to Link, then users have to actually have our UPN name external to contact us, which is not what we want.
Did you all hear that? Okay, you're not alone. It's very, very, very common, actually, and it will come up. So it's in the deck, and also get with me afterwards. So you assign a user to Link Online, you go to the portal, click the user groups, that you click the display name. This is the demo that I would have gone through. It's a lot easier to show this way. Now you click the license, so you enable the user, or you click the user group's display name, then you click the license to check the box, the Link Online, and save. So Office 365 plan, what you'll see enumerated there are the things that you're licensed for. You check what that user's going to have, and you click OK and save. Managing a Link-enabled user. So, you know, whether you're going to record conversations and meetings, that's not available in the basic Link Online. Allow anonymous attendees to dial out. Again, the dial out thing is coming soon. You're not going to dial out from a Link Online. That would be in a hybrid environment. But in general, you're going to enable and disable audio and video. And again, the audio and video, to be very specific, is P2P or P2Many, as long as they're all authenticated internal users. We talked about record conversations and meetings. Allow anonymous attendees to dial out during conferencing. External communications. So federation, who can you federate with? Who can you speak to? Dial in conferencing. Toll-free number, passcode, and provider. Do you think it's coming to a theater near you? This is available in Office 365 dedicated. What we're talking about here is Link Online is a shared environment. The ability exists for you to go to Office 365 dedicated and have enterprise voice in the cloud today. It's a completely separate offering than Office 365, what we're talking about here. And I want to make that delineation very clear. You can do dial-in conferencing with Office 365 dedicated. And essentially, what Office 365 dedicated is a managed service. Microsoft has infrastructure that is connected via network connection to your internal network and is managing that environment for you. That's what Office 365 dedicated is. So that's why you can do enterprise voice, SIP trunking, all of that kind of thing, dial-in conferencing through dedicated.
Yes, sir.
Is there anything in the work to try to get to interact with Facebook? So is there anything in the work to get it to interact with FaceTime? I don't know what Apple's going to do. We generally are... So if I understand you correctly, what you're saying is, can I send an instant message and federate with FaceTime so that someone who's running, who's on FaceTime could then chat with someone who's on Link Online?
Right, since FaceTime is like Apple's version of Skype.
Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm going to say I don't know. I'll look it up, though, because now I'm curious. I'm going to have to go down that rabbit hole. That's a really good question. I know that, you know, like XMPP, which is another, when we talk about enabling instant messaging from, it should be ubiquitous, right? So from one platform to another, like for years, AOL support, that kind of thing, that dropped away. Well, how do you enable that kind of, you know, when you have other clients that are running instant messaging, how do you enable that federation? And it's really, the answer is going towards not one side or the other fixing their code so that they can interoperate with each other. It's establishing a standard from the IEEE and then just going on that standard. So I think that's where it's going to go. I don't know, to be honest with you.
I guess that could also go true for the Yahoo client.
Right. Yep. So again, the demos part, because this is intended for a much longer period, I'm using these slides to demonstrate, not do the demo, but use the slides to show you through the demo. So reporting in Link Online is actually pretty rich. So for Link On-Prem, show of hands, who has, if you've had installed Link On-Prem, have you looked at the reporting out of coming out of the reporting service? It's an evolving thing, I think. So very early on in Link 2010, and then it was, you could get lost, yes. Was the reporting as verbose as it could be? No. And over the last few years, there's a lot of partners that have come out and done a great job doing things like CQM, call quality management, and enabling those kind of reports. Because really, it's all SQL in the back end. You just need to extract the information. So the online reporting is. It will show you a variety of different information that you can use to manage how you onboard, right, and how you're consuming the service. Is it detailed to the nth degree? No. So that's why I say it is what it is. The reporting can be found at on the admin center under the reports. It's going to tell you active users, I am in audio sessions, it's going to go down audio minutes and video minutes. That can be, if you have a chargeback mechanism inside your organization, that can be specific, you know, useful to you. Did you have another question?
I was just wondering if they were going to come up with an external connector like they did with the
So you can take the reporting and export it to Excel, but and then you can, you know, do any kind of aggregating you can in that way. My preference is just to pull it out of SQL, but you know, it depends on what your personal proclivity is, whether you prefer Excel or SQL.
Well, somebody came back and said that you called me an ass online, and had to back and find it. Could I find that in that?
Oh, okay. So let's look at that for a second.
Context.
Right, so there's archiving, right, and there's also history. They're different. But from an HR perspective, you know, this person violated an HR policy over a chat session with me, and I need to, you know, we need to be able to get that. There's archiving where you can archive, but you have to enable it. That's conversation history is stored somewhere else. That's a good question, though. That's a very good question. And it's something to consider as you're planning for Link Online. What are your HR policies around? Do you need to archive? And understand that archiving and conversation history are not the same thing. On top of that, I'm going to add one more thing. This goes back to the user, my focus on the user, right? And that is, if you archive, and this is kind of a no-brainer, but if you archive, let your users know when they're enabled for that, that this is a business application. It will, what you say in these, you know, this is not a private thing between you and your mom. It's not a private thing between you and your buddy down the road. What you say in these IAM windows is archived and is company property unless you're in Germany. But anyway, it's company property. So that's just to save everyone, you know, so that it plants the seed for the end user, right? Sets the expectation that, gosh, I really shouldn't say this off-color thing in a chat because it's for business. So there's a sample report, and it goes over your IAM and audio video conferencing over these specific days, and it's going to give you a grade. There's no data, but this is, if there were data, this is what it would look like. It'd be referenced in table format as well as graphical. So the recommended reports to view. Weekly, you could go over your active users and your IAM and audio sessions. And for a lot of people, the reason active users are, we recommend that you look at that weekly, is consumability, really. This requires an expense, a license expense for your company. And so it's different than, say, you buy an enterprise agreement and you give everybody all the same licensing. They all have Office. Right, so they're on-prem kind of thing. They have Word, they have Outlook, that kind of thing. They have Link. This is to where if you buy a certain number of licensing for Link Online and they're not consuming it, then why enable them and why pay that expense for them to be Link Online? That's where it's getting to from an activity, you know, active user kind of thing. So that's one that you want to look at, and then IAM and audio sessions. Find out. This is going to be a really good one to look at weekly because it's going to tell you who your top talkers are and whether or not their experience from a Moss perspective or is good or bad. When I say Moss perspective, it's going to tell you did they have or were there latency issues, were there jitter issues? I mean, P2P, were there issues with the communication stream going back and forth, right? Did they have issues? This is going to allow you to be prescriptive up front about devices they use, how they consume Link Online. And then monthly, you're going to want to look at video, application sharing, file transfer sessions. And all of this is being used to in a variety of different ways. From a planning perspective, you can look at your consumption at a rate of what am I looking at over the next 3 to 5 years from a consumption. And then you can build that into your plan for whether it's licensing, or if it's infrastructure, or whatever your plan is for your strategy to offer these services to your end users over that time period. So that's really why you want to look at these and then aggregate them over time. Does that make sense? So remote PowerShell is what we were talking about earlier. The minimum operating system would be Windows 7, Server 2008 R2, or Server 2012. And then Windows 8. You'll need PowerShell 3. You'll need the Windows Management Framework 3.0. You'll need .NET Framework 4.5. So there's your additional software that you'll need. If you try to install PowerShell 3, it's going to go through these requirements. You don't have this. Install it. But this is all that link for the link on remote PowerShell. That's going to tell you. If you go to TechNet, it's very, very clear. Load these first, then install this. So that's what you'll need. Installing Link Online Remote PowerShell, again, you'll need to download the PowerShell 3 Windows Management Framework 3.0. This is kind of a duplicate. These are the actual links that you'll need. This is where you can go to download the framework. The sign-in assistant from the download center, the online connector module, I think is the most important. Well, it's not most important. You need it, essentially, if you're going to do remote PowerShell. You're going to need to download and install the Link Online connector module from the download center. So connecting, you're going to import the PowerShell module like we spoke about earlier. You're going to launch a PowerShell window and type in the following commands on the online. You're going to type in import dash module link online connector. You're going to be prompted for credentials. So you're going to create a new session, a Windows PowerShell session. Who here is familiar with this process? Okay. So it's really not that different than creating any other session or creating a profile, and then you can actually create a profile and do this. It's just, this is intended for those, if you need, if you've not done this before, this is a great slide or great deck to have, and it'll take you through. The links that you saw earlier will also take you to the prescriptive guidance on TechNet on how to actually do this step by step. So you have to create the variable $ session by creating the new online session. You're going to import the session once you create it. So and then the commandlets that are available are listed here. For a complete list, it's listed. The URL is on the previous slide. So when you go to download all this, if you don't know what a specific commandlet or how to do something, you know, get help as your friend. There's a whole administrative guide on PowerShell that, if you're not familiar with it, I'd really recommend. I used to say I could do anything PowerShell, and you know, while that's, I still think theoretically that I love PowerShell. If you can't tell, and I'm not a programmer. I did a presentation earlier today on UCWA and then the development of custom apps on Link, which made me appreciate PowerShell even more because I'm not a developer, but the available commandlets are here. If you run into an issue, you get red line or something of that effect, and you cannot find the guidance on TechNet, email me. I'd be more than happy. If I can't answer you, I'm going to go to that class because this is one of those rabbit holes that I love to go down. So I've taught classes on PowerShell, and I'd be more than happy to. And if I can't answer you right away, I'm going to get you to someone who can. So hybrid, what's Link Hybrid? Can anybody tell me what Link Hybrid is?
Use it both.
It's called.
There you go. 2013 on premise, and we want to have some of the services hosted. I guess they all can't be hosted. That's what we're wanting to try.
It's a push me pull you. Who remembers that reference? Push me pull you. You know the llama that went the both ways. Sorry, Dr. Doolittle. That's right. So a Link Hybrid is exactly that. It is a mashup, if you will, of certain things. Certain services are offered Link on-prem, Link server, and certain of those are offered Link online. And this, the whole idea of hybrid has morphed to make it even more complicated over time, over the last few years, with regard to what you can and cannot do. There used to be something called business voice that doesn't exist anymore. That was, well, okay, you can, if you wanted, so for instance, we said enterprise voice online, or enterprise voice is something you do on-prem, you can't do it online. So if you have a requirement for users to do enterprise voice, hybrid, right? You'll have certain workloads on-prem and certain workloads online. For those of your users that don't require enterprise voice, put them up online, it's cheaper. For those of you users that require enterprise voice, they would be on-prem. Back in the day, when I say back in the day, just a couple years ago, there was a time where they were advocating you could have your Link online users subscribe to the enterprise voice service that was on-prem. And that was called business voice. And that was a great idea that failed miserably because the authentication mechanisms and it has to do with that single source of truth, right? So you think of Link, one of the things that people who aren't Microsoft focused, in other words, when I say that, I mean, in Microsoft, there's Active Directory. Active Directory is an object model database, right? There's a user class. You have a user class. Link is predicated on authentication to the client and the user. Different classes, right? But it's the user class. If you take property values and you put them somewhere else other than in your single source of truth, there's Active Directory, and Link needs to look those up, something breaks. And that's why Business Voice didn't work very well, because you had your routes, you had everything configured for Enterprise Voice on-prem, and you had your online user who was enabled online trying to consume the voice policy and the routes out through your Enterprise Voice, and it just didn't work very well at all. So that's why we say the guiding principle for Link Hybrid, that's why I'm staying on this slide, the guiding principle for Link Hybrid is this. It is the workload. And what I mean by workload specifically is the service. Instant messaging and presence, one or the other. Conferencing, one or the other. Enterprise voice, one, not the other. So what we're saying, or what I'm saying, is that you're going to create user classes that will say this particular user or group of users will consume instant messaging presence, audio, video, P2P, conferencing, but they don't require dial-in conferencing, and they don't require dial-out. Link online, they're perfect for it. The other requirement of Enterprise Voice, those users will be homed on-prem. They're still all exist in the same Active Directory force from a user base, but they're consuming services in different places. Did I confuse anybody? Okay, good. So that's where most of the difficulty comes with hybrid. When I talk to customers about hybrid, the confusion comes around, how do I home? I probably just totally went off script in one of the next few slides. So enabling customers deployment choice, server, hybrid, online, right? We talked about private cloud, dedicated, or single domain and directory user splits between server and online. So we asked, what is Link Online or Link Hybrid? We answered that. That's what this slide is going over. Split domain options. So, and this is getting to your point about SIP, right? So when you share a SIP address space between on-prem and online users, you're moving users from on-prem to the cloud and vice versa. It's no problem. Flexibility, making public branch. So basically, if we use contoso.com, if that is your SIP name, your SIP domain, your online users will be, chris.wallach@contoso.com. Your on-prem, that's on-prem. Your online users will be chris.wallach@contoso.com. Right? But, so how do you resolve that? That's when you get into the split brain, or how you resolve the DNS records on the outside. So it requires split domain interoperability, leveraging the federation features, and requires a tenant, which is the Office 365 online part, and then all workloads are, as we said before, one or the other. So the high-level topology, if you go to TechNet and you type in Link Hybrid topology, you'll see this. And really what this is saying is that you have your, in the diagram of users homed on Link Online, will always connect to the Link Edge pool on-prem first to authenticate and log in. So your authentication mechanisms are always on-prem then to online, regardless of whether your user is on-prem or online. It's standardized that way. Once the user's logged in, all traffic will now be directed to the Link Online pools. So when the session is initiated between the online user and the on-prem user, the traffic will traverse your federation channels. Because from a back-end perspective, from a outside facing, they're both contoso.com. From a back-end perspective, they're federated users. One's online, one's not. So it's going to use the federation DNS SRV records of _SIP internal TLS.contoso.com. And again, this is all part of that, the URL that was given for TechNet describes the hybrid topology. very, very detailed. And if you want any information on hybrid with regard to deployment guides, topologies, reference architecture, email me. This is also something that I'm passionate about, because I think for a lot of organizations, this is where they're going to go before they go online completely. Or, I mean, if you're at a point now where you're not consuming anything from Link from a communications or service perspective, you may just take the jump to Office 365 or Skype for Business, which is going to be Office 365. Yes, sir?
The Dom Federation in the Exchange Online world means it has two meanings.
Mm-hmm.
One is Federation, Federated with EDFS, and Federated with the Microsoft Gateway.
Mm-hmm.
Does that exist here as well? Or is it just, I mean, is it, are you talking, so which Federation are you talking about?
So Federation specific, that's a great question. So, and I wish, the application architecture for Exchange and Link, I thought, would have merged a little bit a while ago, but they haven't. And so essentially, to answer your question in a short as possible, Federation in the authentication mechanism perspective, right? So it's not the second, it's the first. So, but the question is, can you use the same mechanism for Exchange that you can for Link? No. So there's a Link component to it, and there's an Exchange component to it. And if
the Federation and the Exchange world, it has more to do with FreeBSD.
Yes.
Right, and the other exchange-related features, but it looks like this is more on the authentication space.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely correct. So, why is that? Do you think? The reason for that is that, in order to talk about application architecture, Exchange has maintained its reliance on Active Directory object classes and property values. Whereas Link, when it went from OCS to Link, diverged from that application architecture. And the reason was that the WMI calls that we were using at the time is for OCS to go back to Active Directory to make those. So you have attributes off of a user class for Exchange that are specific, and Exchange makes calls to all the time. There's a very tight binding from Exchange and Active Directory. OCS used to have a very similar application architecture. Well, what we found was that the WMI calls physically could not execute in time the further away you were from your domain. So we were trying to go to a consolidated architecture model. And hopefully I'm not getting too deep in the weeds, but what was happening is that the time it took the domain controllers to respond to the WMI calls for OCS was just too great. So at the time what they did was they said, okay, we're going to take an extract of the users, put it into a SQL database, and that's what we use for Link. And that's what we've been doing since Link 2010. Link, and that's, you know, the CMS, right? We have the user, we have these databases that we sync with Active Directory, but we're not particularly reliant on Active Directory. So that goes into the whole Federation. It's more for authentication than anything else.
So the same authentication with the SAML history is basically by Link.
I'm sorry?
The same authentication for SAML Office 365 is
by Link. So your question is it the same authentication process from Office 365 as it's in the Link? Oh, SAML? Yes. Yeah. So hybrid requirements. What's required? Well, licensing, DNS, tenant, federation. To be so obviously there's a licensing component to Office 365 Link Online that you'll need. You're gonna have to create a tenant, and what you'll need to know from a tenant perspective is the tenant is bound to the namespace. Right, so the tenant contains the Link Online license, and users will be migrated based on that licensing. You know, when you're in hybrid. So if you're moving them to Link Online, you'll have to have the online licensing, and then you'll use that to enable the services when you move them to Link Online. The SIP domain must be listed as an accepted domain in the Office 365 tenant. So essentially, from your perspective, when you have multiple namespaces, you would list those in that.
In my instance, it's not actually the, you know, the namespace itself. It's on the other side of the at symbol.
Wow.
Where the issue lies.
Yeah, good call.
Thanks.
So any federated allowed block domains that exist in link server must be entered into the matched and link online tenant. So this gets into who you're going to federate with, who you're not going to federate with. All public DNS records for link server on-prem should remain unchanged. I'll say that again. All public DNS records for link server on-prem should not be changed. And again, this gets into the user experience. You want your users to be able to click on the link client, and they don't care if they're online, and they don't care if they're on-prem. They just want it to work. So, and this is by design. So linkdiscover.com or linkdiscover.contoso.com for mobility, remote access federation. It's listed right there.
So you skipped the one about SMTP, yeah.
For remote access?
No, just the third one down there. It says should, it doesn't say must.
User's SIP address should match Exchange SMTP and user and UPN addressing. True. And the reason they say should is it's for simplicity's sake. You can do, and that's to your point, you can do that. It just takes a little extra effort. Link server version requirements, the hybrid requires either Link 2010, with the February 2013 cumulative or CU update. I have a hard time with that word, cumulative. If Link Server 2010 is used, you must have the Link 2013 administrative tools installed in organization and use them to configure your link hybrid. Microsoft recommends using the latest updates installed, and there's the link there to go to the update center, make sure that you have the latest CU patches installed. Link Server 2013 can be deployed in an organization that has OCS 2007 R2, assuming that Link 2010 is not also in the organization. This just gets back to the N plus one kind of, right? So we don't support more than one version past. That makes sense. And it's, quite frankly, from your perspective, it's a lot more difficult if you try to go that way. You had a question?
I do. If you can go back to one slide, please.
Huh?
So on the DNS records, what is the dependency that Link has on Exchange AutoDiscover?
So it's actually AutoDiscover, but it's not Exchange AutoDiscover. It's the AutoDiscover service,
yeah.
Right, for Link.
Right. So what I would like to understand from you is for a customer who is in a hybrid mode, who's trying to move from on-prem to the cloud, right? So according to the practices that Microsoft is recommending, your AutoDiscover is pointing to on-prem. For up until the point wherein all users are migrated. But let's say that customer wants to retain Link on-prem, so how do we resolve that?
So that's where it says your on-prem DNS records will not change. So your AutoDiscover will always point to on-prem. Because if you're in hybrid, you're essentially in a situation where you have some users in online and some users on-prem. That's not going to change. In the context of what we're talking about, hybrid, it's not going to change. So your auto-discovered DNS records need to point, and then they'll always go through the edge.
So auto-discover should always point to on-prem, even if all users are migrated to Exchange Online?
No. So we're talking about hybrid. In a hybrid environment, it should point to on-prem.
But the hybrid nature comes from the point of view of users are using Exchange Online?
And no, not Exchange. Link Online.
No, I'm saying Exchange Online for email.
Okay.
Right, but Link on-prem for Link. So that's the hybrid scenario. In that scenario,
So you're confusing the products. AutoDiscover for Link does, where am I homed? Right, so I'm trying to, my Link client comes online, I'm at home, I fire it up, it goes out to the internet and says, where do I log in at? So there's an auto-discover process where my client is saying, okay, Contoso, it goes to autodiscover.contoso.com and says, here's my client, where do I log in at? that's hosted on your edge. So that whole authentication process still needs to occur regardless of whether your link client, and we're talking about the link client,
right,
not Exchange. So it's your link client. If you're, that process will go through, and the auto-discover will say he's an on-prem and he's hosted on this front-end pool, or he's hosted on this link online instance. So it all has to do with registry, and did what the directors used to do back in late 2010. So that whole auto-discovery is an attempt that you don't necessarily have to manually insert in your link client. Here's where you're homed at. Very similar process to Exchange. Very similar, but it's the link client as opposed to Outlook.
Let me see you after.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. All right. Link server version requirements. We talked about hybrid 2010. Link 2013 cannot be deployed in an organization. And obviously, we talked about that. All right. Directory synchronization requirements. So DirSync, remember I said before, it's the federation, the directory synchronization that causes the most havoc and problems with people when they go to a hybrid environment. So they're doing the deployment. It's not simple, but it's not, I don't want to say it's not rocket science. It is complex. And getting it configured is through the process, and I don't want to scare you away and say don't do hybrid because it's too complex. There's thousands of organizations are doing this as we speak. There's due diligence that you need to go through and document this through the there's a deployment guide that you can use for hybrid. And so what we're saying is the directory synchronization needs to be configured or planned for up front, right? So there's the MSRTC SIP application options, deployment locator, and all of this, again, there's a URL at the end of this that will take you to this TechNet article that will say this is what you need to do. There's a deployment guide that says you need to identify these DNS records. You need to identify this attribute so that your link online users will be provisioned. So there should be a very clear line of questions that need to be answered when you go to link online. Go ahead. So the question is, if the SIP line URI does not match your SMTP, what do you do?
Is it for the best user experience in the case that you can't match it?
So you'll there's a way to configure link online that this is an authoritative namespace. In other words, you're adding this SIP. So when you go to the online tool, you're going to add that as a recognized namespace. Right. So the authorization requirements. Users of Link Online must be able to authenticate, obviously, to Office 365 user object, and the authentication can be done in one of the following methods. So it's a cloud identity. So the password is managed by Office 365, or the cloud identity plus password synchronization, or the federated identity. So there's a variety of ways. The cloud identity plus password synchronization is probably the most complex. So it's where you're using some form of attestation to implement your federation. It's beyond directory synchronization, something MIS used to do. Federated identity. So with regard to federated identity, and we're running up against the end of our time, I'm going to say this is my prediction. There will come a time within the next 5 to 7 years when the idea of a phone number will become antiquated. What I mean to say is my grandchildren will probably grow up in a world where if they want to get a hold of you, they'll click your contact. If they don't know your contact, they'll look to the global directory. So, if you look at the way that federation exists today, not just with Microsoft, but with any organization, the bodies the international bodies that are generating these federated identities, right? Whether it's Ping Federate or what have you, we're quickly coming to a time where identity-based or contact-based communication will become the norm as opposed to what's your number. That's my prediction. And the reason I say that is that the global directory is not a new idea. The IEEE has been thinking about it for a long, long time, and they're generating the engineering standards for that particular protocol. Cisco's been doing it for a long time. They've been, you know, in an attempt to try and bind their PBXs together so they have one unified platform rather than four-digit, five-digit dialing. So this whole idea of integrated federation or integrated identity has actually come to the forefront. Sorry. And to put a finer point on it, what we're saying is the devices and the ways, the electronics that you use today, whether it's at work or at home, will be the same devices. You'll be able to, and you will, use your television to communicate with someone at work. You'll use your phone to communicate with someone at a soccer field. And you won't do that by dialing a number, or you'll do that by presence-based, skills-based, that kind of thing. So federation is very, very important, and it has come to the forefront, and it's not that long before these mechanisms are able to communicate with each other. Open federation. So from that, we talk about the DNS requirements and these next few slides, their certificate requirements, networking and firewall. Excuse me just one moment. If I didn't tell you I had a cold earlier, I have a cold. We're up against the end of the time, and I really want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for the engagement. Let me ask you this. Was this useful?
Yes.
Okay, good. I'm glad to hear that. And I'm going to, again, put out the, if there's something here, the next few slides are all reference. They're all these kind of tables, things that you'll need. You'll be able to access these slides up on the office, the summit. If there's information that you're not getting here, email me. Absolutely. My email information is up on the summit. It's up on Yammer. It's up on the second site. Feel free to come by at any time. If you can't tell, hopefully I'm a little passionate about this. So thank you very much. Thank you.